Some people are truly forces of nature. Popes, kings, and conquerors have survived wars and assassination attempts in their quest to determine the course of history for better and worse. But sometimes, even those that can't be stopped by the biggest, baddest aggressors end up succumbing to a little guy you could squish with one finger. The mosquito. These bugs we think of more as annoying than deadly have had an oversized role in shaping the world as we know it. As proof, here are 5 times mosquitoes brought down hugely influential people. We're starting off, as many things in the 16th century did, at the Vatican. Pope Sixtus V became pope in 1585, when things weren't going great for the Vatican. There was chaos, lawlessness, and they were pretty much broke. So Sixtus V came in with a firm fist to get the church's financial ducks in a row. In addition to his fiscal policy, he instituted a completely new administrative system, and had a huge impact on architecture and infrastructure. He even organized a congregation of waters and streets to drain the marshes and reduce the number of fevers people were coming down with. And then, 5 years into his papacy, he ironically contracted marsh fever and died a few days later. Today, we would call marsh fever malaria, and one analysis determined that around then, malaria killed 15% of popes. In fact, this guy's successor, Urban VII, contracted malaria and died 12 days after his election, before he ever got the chance to be pope, which almost makes you wonder if the blood of a pope tastes better to mosquitoes or something. Maybe they're drawn to that great outfit or the smell of the white smoke, but there's a much more likely explanation. Historically, Rome has had high rates of malaria because of its location on the Tiber River, which has a tendency to flood. Combine that with cisterns located underneath houses, and you have a dream breeding ground for the female mosquitoes that spread the disease. If it spread to you, you'd come down with a fever, chills, headaches, or body aches, the telltale signs that the malaria-causing microbe has a foothold. That tiny microbe is called P. falciparum, and it gives even the most influential people in the world those symptoms via their blood. It infects your red blood cells and makes them sticky so they clump together and attach to blood vessel walls. That takes them out of circulation, literally, and if they're not circulating in the bloodstream, they're never making it to the spleen, where damaged red blood cells are usually removed. So instead of being destroyed, the microbe ends up hanging around longer. The clumps of cells also cause blood clots that can block blood from getting to your organs, escalating quickly into kidney and liver failure, difficulty breathing, confusion, seizures, coma, and even death. You've got to have a little sympathy for someone who died that way, even if Sixtus wasn't particularly popular. At least he had a lot of big dreams for improving life for the citizens of Rome and the Papal States. But a lot of them fell apart when he was no longer there to supervise them, thanks to the little mosquitoes buzzing around. And we'll never know if those programs would have been more enduring if he had lived long enough to see them through. Malaria doesn't just kill on its own. Sometimes it teams up with another infection. That's what happened to Oliver Cromwell. Cromwell was born in England in 1599 and became a big player in both the First and Second English Civil Wars. At the end of the Second Civil War in 1649, King Charles I was defeated. The new government abolished the House of Lords and executed Charles for good measure. England was no longer a monarchy, but a commonwealth. That same year, political and military bigwig Oliver Cromwell went off to invade Ireland and Scotland and pull them into the Commonwealth too. No big deal, just personally responsible for reclassifying entire swaths of land and the communities that lived there. Then he ruled over the whole shebang as Lord Protector for 5 years until he died of something. He started experiencing bowel and back pain in August 1658. That would get better and then get worse again, cycling that way for a month. On September 1st, he rallied one final time before dying 2 nights later. His doctor did an autopsy and reported enlarged brain vessels, inflamed lungs, and an infected spleen. From those outcomes, the doctor diagnosed him with bastard tertian ague. My primary care physician could never. ague referred to fever, and tertian indicated that the fever rose and fell. And whatever he had killed him, so it really was a bastard. His symptoms were in line with the less deadly malaria infections caused by the P. vivax pathogen, which happened to be present where he was at the time in the British Isles. And the cyclical pattern of fever that he went through is due to the tiny pathogen's giant impacts on its host at different stages of its life cycle. So there's an explanation for everything, except, as I said, P. falciparum is the strain of malaria that's most likely to kill you, not P. vivax, unless something else goes wrong. And Cromwell probably had a little something else called salmonella. That would explain the fever, cough, and bowel pain reported in his final days, along with his abnormal brain vessels and spleen. And it probably wouldn't surprise any epidemiologists either. One study from 2021 suggests that 15% of adults with severe malaria also have some sort of bacterial infection. This could happen because of your immune response to severe malaria, which can weaken the barriers of your gastrointestinal tract and make it more vulnerable to bacterial diseases. So malaria might not have directly caused Oliver Cromwell's death, but he probably wouldn't have contracted the infection that did kill him if he hadn't had malaria. And he had only been in power for 5 years when he died, so who knows what kind of havoc he would have caused with more time. He was already known as the Terror of Europe thanks to military victories in Spain, Jamaica, and France, so it's safe to say that both Britain and Europe would probably look very different if he had continued his reign. Before the next famous victim of the all-too-bothersome mosquito, here's an ad. Thank you to Uncommon Goods for supporting this SciShow video. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And you won't see them anywhere else because they look for handmade products made in the United States and crafted by independent artists and small businesses. So every gift is meaningful and one of a kind. I mean, where else can you get a DIY root beer science kit? I'm not making this up. You can give a budding brewmaster a gift that will fill your home with fun activities, all natural ingredients, and science, because nothing is complete without science, or at least nothing at SciShow. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard football fans, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. To date, they've donated more than $3.1 million, and you can be a part of that. So cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scishow. That's uncommongoods.com/scishow for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. Their motto is, "We're all out of the ordinary." While we're in Europe, let's fast forward in time to one of its most noteworthy moments in history and the people that made it so noteworthy. Charles Leclerc was a French general who just so happened to be Napoleon's brother-in-law. He helped bring Napoleon to power, and Napoleon was so impressed that in 1802, he sent him to the French colony now known as Haiti to shut down the Haitian Revolution. Unfortunately for Leclerc, 1802 was also the year a deadly yellow fever epidemic hit Haiti. And when I say a deadly epidemic, I mostly mean for the French. See, the Haitians knew a few tricks to fend off disease. They fought with guerrilla warfare tactics, stationing their troops in the mountains, where cooler temperatures kept them relatively safe from mosquitoes. Plus, they had some degree of acquired immunity to the disease already. The French, on the other hand, were forced into cramped quarters in the port cities, where stagnant water and hot temperatures were common during the rainy season. There were itty-bitty, deadly mosquitoes everywhere. Their immune systems were not prepared, and they tried to treat the disease by bloodletting, which just made things worse. By one estimate, up to 85% of the French force died of yellow fever by 1804, including General Leclerc. His yellow skin with dark splotches was a dead giveaway that he had yellow fever. But in the 21st century, we have more advanced diagnostic tools. Today, blood tests can identify viral RNA and antibodies. It's not a perfect system because by the time symptoms appear, it's too late to detect viral RNA, and antibodies can tell you if you have one of the viruses in the yellow fever West Nile dengue family, but not necessarily which one. Plus, not everyone infected with the yellow fever virus even has symptoms. Most of the time, when you do, the symptoms are pretty generic. Fever, headache, body aches, nausea, and vomiting. But it's a little bit of a mystery why only some people go through all of that. A study published in 2019 concluded that it could be any of the common culprits. Genes, environment, or diet. It's basically a big scientific shrug right now. Those researchers found that the people who experienced symptoms like soreness and fever after getting the yellow fever vaccine had lower expression of certain metabolic genes and had more signs of stress in the protein-producing parts of their blood cells. So we're all still working out why some people develop yellow fever symptoms while others don't. But at least we know what happens when you do. About 15% of people who develop symptoms will start to feel better and then crash hard. They'll develop fevers, shock organ failure, bleeding from their gums, and jaundice. The last symptom gives sufferers the telltale yellow splotchy skin, where yellow fever gets its name. When the French army started coming down with all of those symptoms, it wiped them out and forced them to withdraw from Haiti. That's when they pretty much gave up on colonizing the Caribbean. And some historians think that they were supposed to later invade North America through New Orleans. So with their army dead, France sold off their Louisiana territory in 1803's Louisiana Purchase and basically noped out of America. But don't go thinking that mosquitoes only kill influential people of the past. In modern-day India, they went up against legislator Asha Patel. In India, a certain percentage of jobs and educational opportunities are reserved for members of castes that have been historically disadvantaged. Tensions have swirled around this system for decades, including in the state of Gujarat, where some of the castes that didn't have this special designation have lost political power and economic opportunities. Things came to a head in 2015 when the young people of the Patidar community of Gujarat began holding demonstrations demanding this particular status and access to protected jobs and opportunities. That's when Asha Patel got involved and launched her political career. In 2017, she became an elected member of the Legislative Assembly as part of the Indian National Congress Party. But in 2021, Patel was admitted to the hospital with dengue fever. It typically spreads when a seemingly insignificant mosquito feeds on an infected person and then goes on to bite another person, say an elected politician. And there's about 4 billion people living where those mosquitoes could pass around dengue. That's half the world's population. Every year, roughly a quarter of infected people go on to develop symptoms. Like yellow fever, these include fever, rash, nausea, vomiting, and severe body pain. Since it's in the same family as yellow fever, scientists suspect that the same cellular stress and metabolism changes might be the reason some people show symptoms and others don't. Then, about 5% of people will develop severe dengue, where the virus damages blood vessels so you experience shock, internal bleeding, and organ failure. That's what happened to Asha Patel. The virus caused her heart, lungs, liver, and kidneys all to shut down. And in 2021, she died of multi-organ failure at the age of 44. When she died, India lost a leading voice for the Patidar community. And as of 2024, Patidars still haven't been recommended for reservation status. Now, there is one final person on this list, one of the all-time greatest of the greats. So great, it's in his name. Alexander the Great was a king of Macedonia, born in the 4th century BCE. He overthrew the Persian Empire, conquered the tribes of Western Asia Minor, and then just kept going. He took Egypt and founded the city of Alexandria, occupied Babylon, and then headed towards Central Asia. All of that in just about 13 years. And then he got sick and developed a fever. 11 days later, he was dead. By the time of his death at age 32, his empire spanned roughly 2 million square miles, almost the size of two Indias next to each other. This is a guy who won literally every battle he ever participated in. But I doubt he was even armed when a much smaller opponent struck. I'm talking about a mosquito, and I'll tell you why, but first I have to acknowledge that it can be difficult to definitively determine the cause of death of someone who died 2,400 years ago. And there are a few theories going around. In addition to a fever, he had stomach pain, delirium, and difficulty speaking. His symptoms match most closely to the flu, but there were no reports of anyone who hung out with him getting sick around that time, so that seems unlikely. As an alternative, some researchers think he died from pancreatitis due to heavy drinking, but that diagnosis doesn't factor in a clue recorded by Plutarch, a Greek historian who wrote a biography of Alexander the Great several hundred years after his
his death.
According to Plutarch, when Alexander the Great was in Babylon, nearby ravens started acting erratically and died in large numbers, which is similar to what scientists observed in 1999 among birds at the Bronx Zoo. This was the beginning of the West Nile virus outbreak. This was the result of mosquitoes feeding on infected birds. Being part of the same family as the last two viruses, about 80% of people infected with West Nile never show symptoms, but those that do develop symptoms will typically have fever, headache, body aches, nausea, vomiting, and a rash. In other words, pretty much the same as the other illnesses we talked about. Again, not surprising, it's in the same family. Then, in about 1% of people, the virus invades the brain. Scientists don't know exactly why some people are more vulnerable to this outcome, but it happens more frequently in people who are older, male, or immunocompromised, and there may be some genetic factors at play too. Whatever the reason, when it reaches your brain, your immune system kicks into gear, causing inflammation and swelling, leading to what's known as West Nile virus encephalitis. Once that happens, patients experience muscle weakness and paralysis, like the kind that made it difficult for Alexander the Great to talk. Patients can also end up with confusion and behavior changes, which are consistent with reports of Alexander the Great's delirium and convulsions. And in these cases, West Nile infection can eventually end in death, even for unkillable kings. If Alexander the Great hadn't died so young, it's reasonable to think that he would have continued his conquest, connecting even more of the world politically, economically, and culturally in ways that we'd likely see ramifications of today. Put all of these titans together, plus the millions of other people who have come down with mosquito-borne diseases, and it's safe to say that global culture, politics, language, trade, religion, pretty much all of life as we know it, would look very different today if it weren't for the most annoying and deadly thing on Earth, the mosquito. Though they be but little, they are fierce.